But Bad Batch also said, I need to throw another $100 into crypto because Bad Batch is talking about blockchain for people.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, it is episode 159, and Wednesdays are the new Fridays. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yes. And Saturdays are the new Friday nights for us, right? Because we're...
Hey, it depends on your work schedule, right?
That's right. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, or if you're retired, every day's Friday. So how you been?
Good. Good. Work is the same. We're getting ready to launch the Airtable stuff, so that's fun and exciting.
Oh, here we go. More Airtable talk.
No, I'm just mentioning it. I'm just mentioning it, okay? Oh, and then we went to a party. Don't tell anybody.
I won't tell anyone. No one's listening.
We went to a party last night.
Okay.
For a friend who's leaving town to go do her, I guess she called it an internship, but it's like residency. She's a doctor. So she's ready to like work 30 days straight and then do all that stuff for a year to earn her chops to be a doctor. But we figured everybody's chomping at the bit. Everybody's been vaccinated for a couple weeks now. So we're all in the clear. So three families decided we could get together and hang out on a Friday night. So that's why I had asked to push this one evening. And man, it was different.
So what kind of doctor? Like internal medicine or GP or?
Dermatology.
Dermatology, okay.
Yeah. I think she's doing a dermatology surgery round, or I don't know. I'm not very good at figuring this stuff out. I was just
stick to Airtable.
exactly. So, but yeah, it was really it was amazing to hang out, you know, like in person. And it was a lot of fun. And
so you guys had like dinner and stuff, or
yeah, we had dinner and we had and he got a bottle of Willet bourbon. So we had my namesake.
There you go.
In bourbon, and that was fun. And then that's it. And then today Anne said, oh, I got you and Frank this Father's Day gift for Father's Day last year. And because of COVID, you couldn't use it. So
is it that one to the brewery?
Yeah, we went to the brewery today.
Oh, okay.
So Frank and I went to the brewery for a little tasting menu of that hand-brewed beer.
Did they give it like on a flight of six or something? Or
yeah, you know, Anne bought the flight for two. But when we came in to the place, they said they got rid of the flights because of COVID. But they did two 10-ounce pours. For the same, you know, the flight is the flight is 4 5-ounce pours or 5 4-ounce pours or something like that. So it's like 20 ounces. So now because of COVID, they're only doing 2 10-ounce pours. I was like, that's fine.
And what'd you get?
I went with a New England hazy IPA that was really good. I forgot the name of it, but it's like free something. I don't know. But it was really good. And then we had an oatmeal mountain. There's an oatmeal mountain here in San Fernando Valley, like on the San Fernando mountains. And it's an oatmeal double imperial oatmeal stout.
So it's named after the hill or something.
Yeah. Well, it's Oatmeal Hill.
Kind of like the Figaro Mountain stuff.
Yeah, but it's Oatmeal Hill. So it's doubly named because it's obviously an oatmeal stout, and then it's also oatmeal. So it was a super smooth one.
So you're just having it for breakfast.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's exactly what I said.
Man, it is beer talk, man. Let's get into some beer.
Oh, let's crack these. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez. This thing just broke. Uh-oh. No, I can't untwist it.
Uh-oh.
It's the little, like, cage.
Yes.
And not the Nick Cage either. It would cooperate with me.
Or would it?
Oh, man, I don't know. But now I can't get this off.
Well, uh-oh. All right, I'll pop mine then.
Yeah. Oh, boy, I don't know what I'm going to do. I might have to go get like some side cutters,
some
diagonal cutters or
some
something.
Tools. All right, I'll pop mine because mine's a cap.
Oh, there we go. I got it. Yeah, yours is a cap. So I was good. I'm drinking mine as well. So I gave Ted, I sent home a beer for Ted, some homebrew stout. I call it a tropical stout.
Tropical stout.
So I gave him a capped beer. I was going to give him a cork like I'm drinking here, but I had one of my corked. So I pretty much capped them all, but for the last couple, because I ran out of the caps, you know, the cap bottles. So I did a couple of corks at the end, but the first corked one I had, it tasted oxidized. And I was like,
really?
I don't know if it's because I was just sloppy and splashed or if it's something to do with the cork. So I was a little apprehensive to send you a cork. So I sent you a cap. That's why you got a cap. But I'm drinking a cork tonight just to see if it was me or, you know.
If it's a one-off or if it was all the corks.
Yep, there we go. Little pop there. And let me get mine poured.
So you said tropical stout?
Yeah, I call it a tropical stout because the recipe was really mild on the hops. And I don't remember what the hop was.
All right. You said no hop schedule. Just toss it in and you're done.
Well, it was... there was hops right on the front, so right at the 60-minute mark, and then there was nothing added after, so it's strictly for bittering.
Yeah.
And then you have the malt, and you have the grain and all that stuff, but 7.7, 42 IBUs.
Nice, nice.
So, here, put it down. Of course, Clarissa has to tap into... oh, there you go. Enjoy.
Good deal.
Well, it's not a big bottle. Yeah, she's looking at me like I didn't pour her any. I'm like, well, it's not a big bottle, you know? Like, she's had plenty of my beers. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I like it. I like it. It's kind of like a brighter.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have said tropical if you didn't say it.
Well, I say that because it's like you said, it's brighter, it's lighter, it's not one of those, like, it's not a heavy stout, you know, it's more for like beach going.
It's like it has like stouts are not usually this acidic, right?
Acidic?
Acidic. Yeah, like acidic in coffee talk.
Oh,
as an ex-barista,
you
know, the bright, the morning blends, you know, everybody says, oh, they're smoother, but they're actually more acidic. And because they're more acidic, they sit higher on your palate and they kind of just, they're brighter, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And yeah, I would agree with that. I didn't think of it in coffee talk terms.
when you deal with a stout and a porter, you know, coffee talk is completely apropos.
Exactly. So yeah, overall, I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, it's my brew, so I don't know how I interpret what I'm brewing. I feel that... Talking at Valley Brewers with Chris over there, we were talking about how different beers from the same batch can taste different over time. And there's times where you drink one of your beers, you're like, this thing's amazing.
Uh-huh.
And then you have another beer another day and you're like, what the heck did I do wrong? This thing is terrible, you know? And so sometimes when I open my beers, I'm always worried which one I'm going to have. And I would have to say, though, but for that one, and this one tastes fine. I just must have been sloppy with my bottling on something and just splashed and got some oxygen. And
so one or two didn't hit, right?
Yeah, it got some oxygen and it oxidized or something. But this corked one is fine. I was going to send you this one too, but or not two, I should say, but I was going to send you this one instead. But I figured, you know what? I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to give them a cap.
You know the caps work. You know they're usually cleaner or whatever, the higher degree of certainty with them.
Yeah, I'm curious what you're going to think as it warms up a little bit.
Yeah.
I like the darker head on it, you know, like the chocolatey looking head.
Right. No, it's beautiful.
I always enjoy when they turn out like that instead of more white. You know what I mean?
Well, and then while we were talking, I pulled up the hand brewed beer, the menu.
Okay.
And it was so funny because Frank and I roll up and we're like, oh, we'll sit outside in the bartender.
Was it crowded?
Not at all. Not crowded. And we were concerned for them, but they're like, oh, the Dodger game is later, so people will probably start showing up. And by the time we were leaving, it was, you know, it was still like half hour before the Dodger game, but it started to fill up a little bit. But they had great outdoor seating, great tent, great moving air.
Now, this is in Chatsworth?
Chatsworth, yeah.
It's that one. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that one up there. And then the bartender said, here's your table, you know, sit at any table and you just scan this QR code for the beers that we have.
with your phone.
With your phone, yeah, just with the camera.
And what, text it to him or something?
No. This is just to pull up the menu, and then he said he'd be right back. So,
oh, the menu, okay.
So the menu, like the what is it, the dozen beers they had. So I just pulled my phone out and I scanned it, and Frank was like, oh, your phone has a QR scanner. I was like, yours does too. I think all cameras, you know, will scan the QR code. He goes, I don't think so.
You just need the app.
But you don't even need an app now. It's like, it's just integrated in phone cameras. It's like a firmware thing.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, I don't think I have it. I said, come on, pull your phone out. So he pulled his phone out and it loaded, right? So we ordered our first beer and I pulled up the name. So the name of the first beer was Flash Fud New England IPA.
Flash Fud. So when his QR scanner, when his camera scanned it, was he like, just like, I can't believe it.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
It's the mark of the beast.
He was like, and then he was trying to hit the buttons on his phone and he's like, I copied it. I'm like, no, you just hit higher than that. You know, you're just kind of fumbling around. And then I said, you hit the URL. You don't hit the little copy underneath it, you know? And he goes, oh, you have an iPhone and I don't have an iPhone. And I'm like, you're fine. Everything's fine. And then we had our first beer and then the second beer, and he's like, oh, what should I have? And he's like, pulled out his phone and he's like, I lost it. I can't find it anymore. And so then I texted it to him because I had it on my phone. So I texted to him, and as he's looking for it, my text pops up on his phone and he clicks on it. He goes, oh, thanks. That's great. You know? So we have the second beer. And for the second beer, we both had the oatmeal, Oat Mountain Stout.
Oat Mountain Stout. Okay.
All right. Which is a stout double imperial IPA. I think we broke the system a little bit because I was like, ooh, it's only a 5 ounce pour and there's supposed to be 2 10-ounce pours. But hey, this is a 10.1 ABV. It's probably worth it. Let's check it out.
Did they pour you the full 10?
They poured the full 10. I was like, winner.
You know? Yeah, I was going to say, it's amazing.
So we gamed the system. We got that. And then we started buying beers, you know, because I was like, all right. So we had our two free beers on Anne. Thank you, Anne, for the Father's Day gift. And then I said, for our third beer, let's check out, it's called Pale Ale. So it's called Gorn Sesh Pale Ale. And that's what I was checking out. And then he ordered what is it called? Let's pull it up here. The El Chabasco. I wish. El Chabasco.
Okay.
And that's the one with jalapeno. It's IPA with jalapenos in it.
Oh, I've had that one.
I like that one a lot. It is spicy and whatever, but I like it a lot. And, it was funny because he brought out the beers that last round, and he mislabeled them. So he gave Frank my beer and he gave me Frank's beer. And I took a sip and I was like, I've never had the pale ale before, the Gorn Sesh. I was like, oh, this is kind of spicy. Like, I like this beer. But is yours spicy? And Frank's like, yeah, mine's spicy. And we both had just had the oatmeal stout. So it was like, after something nice and mellow like that, any IPA is gonna kind of kick. And I took a second sip and I was like, nah, this is, I have yours. I definitely have yours. I said, yeah. Here, Frank, take this and you can compare. And he took one sip. He's like, oh, that's definitely the Chabasco. So I had taken my growler there and I was like, oh, I only had two sips of Chabasco. So fill up that growler with Chabasco. So
that's
I brought some Chabasco home. But yeah, I love their beers, and I was so happy that they were filling growlers again, and a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's always exciting.
Can't wait. Can't wait to come up there to you guys, or you guys to come down here, and we'll hit some breweries because they 818's also up that way in Chatsworth.
Oh, okay.
And they were open too on the way home. We saw them.
You're like not a pub, but a brewery crawl.
Yeah, yeah. And it'd be like a beer garden crawl because they're all outdoors now. They're all in the parking lot, so it really feels more like a beer garden.
Yeah, I like that. And when it's when it's hot out, drinking some cold beers.
Oh, yeah.
You're outside. I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, I like outside stuff. And you know, I think, you know, a lot of bad stuff comes out of COVID, but I think a lot of good things too have come out of it. And I think the outdoor sidewalk cafe kind of stuff, you know, Euro style, al fresco.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that's something that sticks.
I mean, it totally can stick, you know, in our climates. You know what I mean, I think back east, it's not so easily.
Yeah, you could probably go like what, maybe March to October with heaters.
Yeah.
You know, and then once winter hits, of course, and it really gets cold and snowy and stuff. No, but
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like if you go through to like Halloween and you start like end of March, beginning of April, you could be outside. And then, like I said, with some heaters and tents and stuff like that. And then, yeah, I mean, I just think that outdoor cafe type style, like when, you know, I'll be cruising down whatever past some restaurants on the bike, you know, and you see people sitting out on the sidewalk having a burger or something. I'm like, man, it's so cool, you know.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's so Euro style. I like it.
How was your week? What were you up to?
Yeah, week was good. So we talked last week about getting back to some fitness and weightlifting.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
All this. Man, I'll tell you, a couple of barbell sessions, I can't walk for a week. Oh, I've been so sore. So then, you know, I pruned the oak tree in the back.
Uh-huh.
And the oak is one of those like crazy sprawling, like multi-treed oak trees. And, you know, it's a lot of dead growth in there, you know, dead growth. That's kind of an oxymoron. But, you know, there's a lot of die-off, so the tree
right.
keeps itself going and everything. So I get up in there, I was cleaning it. And a lot of it, I was either doing hand sawing on the small stuff, or I used like a sawzall with a pruning blade, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
reciprocating saw. And I didn't need to pull out the chainsaw for anything, because that's usually for big logs. But yeah, cut off a lot of stuff, a lot of the dead, a lot of the inner growth. I wanted to go out to the canopy. So it's really clean now. And I have this massive pile in the backyard of pruned oak.
Twigs.
But not just twigs. I mean, some are some major logs of, you know, dead stuff and things that weren't growing and whatever. But you know, you're done weightlifting and then it's like, oh, I'm going to go like saw. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm up there. My shoulders are burning and on fire, you know? And yeah, I got that all cleaned up. And then we were playing a game called Talisman. So, you know, we've just been doing a lot of like board game playing and stuff. And,
uh-huh.
and Talisman's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons board game sort of a thing.
Okay.
You know, like you roll dice, you move around the board, and then it's like, you know.
Is it like 27-sided dice?
No, it's just 6-sided dice.
Okay.
But, and then there's like, you know, you have strength and, you know, like you roll and then my roll plus my strength against your roll and your strength. You know, it's just
that kind of stuff.
And you had these little modifiers and you could cast spells and fight different things. And so, yeah, the boys like it. And then after a while, it's like these games go on for a long time.
Too long, yeah.
So it's like, all right, time for bed. Let's just leave it where it is and get on our way with it and stuff. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun and the boys get into it. And it's easy. You know, it's like you roll and you kind of just do what the cards say, or you do what you land on, what that says. And yeah, so I would say other than that, you know, and then watching stuff we'll get to at the end. But
right.
other than that, it's been a fairly light week with regard to doing things. I mean, when I'm talking about playing board games and pruning oak trees, you know, not a whole lot going on this week. So, you know what? And sometimes that's a good thing after all the drama from the past other weeks with Jake and stuff, you know.
Yeah. I felt bad. I saw that you posted a new picture, you know, just missing Jake from the last walk.
Oh, yeah. That was the day or 2 days. I think the day before we had to put him down.
But yeah, I mean, like, I've known Jake for a long time, you know, and he definitely did not look like he was at his top. You know, he was definitely frail and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was not doing well at the end there.
And that was one of the better pictures, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You know, but you could tell, like, if I put up other ones, you could see in his posture how he was really hurt.
And just in the face, you know, the face is the thing that was getting me.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. But it was so there was something. Oh, yeah. So I won't get into it because I'm pretty sure Anne doesn't want me to get into it. But man, I spent this week on cryptocurrency like you wouldn't believe.
Wait, you're buying cryptocurrency?
Well, you know, a little bit. I'm dabbling. Okay. A little bit in crypto.
What are you going to do? You're going to run some like underground mob, you know, some mafia.
Like, no,
I don't even know what you'd call it, like underworld. You're part of the underworld.
No, but it's so hard. So like, you know, as you buy when you try to buy crypto, like I had done some stuff in Robinhood, you know, which is super easy, you know, and okay. you can buy some. I had done Bitcoin in the Cash App, and I had done Dogecoin in Robinhood.
Okay.
And then when the Dogecoin that I bought at 8 cents, when it popped to 30 cents, 50 cents from 8 cents, I was like, oh yeah, I got this. I know exactly what I'm doing, right? So.
Yeah, because it can never go down to 1 cent.
Well, you know, it has a decent support line. Anyway, never mind. I don't want to get too deep into that. But I will say that it was like these two places. And then I started checking out Robinhood because I wanted to get into different cryptos. So they weren't available on Robinhood. So I started looking around and I started watching some videos and stuff. And people were saying things about, like, if you look at the way Robinhood sells you crypto, it doesn't have a wallet address and you can't transfer it. And that's kind of like the basis of why crypto exists, is so it's easily transferable throughout the world, right?
The blockchain.
So some YouTubers are even saying, like, you don't know what Robinhood is doing with your money when they have it. You know, they could be pegging something to Dogecoin or pegging something to the cryptos that they offer.
So the blockchain is identified to them, not you.
Right.
Ah.
And it's like a cul-de-sac. Like I couldn't move my Dogecoin from that service to another wallet. So as I was getting other wallets elsewhere, you know, I had to find out what the fees were, and my fees are all over the place for all these places. And then I finally settled on crypto.com, which I guess is based out of Hong Kong. And because it's based out of Hong Kong, you know, it was hard to figure out who was going to, none of my banks that I bank with wanted to, you know, give my money to this Hong Kong bank, which is the backing of this crypto.com.
Well, there's your first clue.
But it's still legit. Like, I found, you know, I was like, all right, so this is something. Maybe there's an issue, right? Maybe there's something going on here. But I was able to move some stuff into the Cash App, and the Cash App has a Bitcoin wallet, so you can move that wallet to any other Bitcoin wallet in the world. So I was able to move some Bitcoin out and then buy my other cryptos out of that Bitcoin. And as I was describing this to Audrey, Audrey's like, "You're laundering money, aren't you?" I was like, "Why would I launder money? I needed to hop in a couple places. I'm not money laundering. There's no reason, you know. This is like the money I make at work, you know. It's not." I was like defending myself to my 15-year-old daughter. But it was a lot of fun. It was really hard to do. And then tonight, Dogecoin goes to the moon because, you know, Elon Musk is on Saturday Night Live, and I think it's going to top a dollar. So that's my hope.
So what is Dogecoin in relation to Bitcoin? I mean, it's just a different...
Nothing.
No, I mean, it's just a different cryptocurrency?
Just a different cryptocurrency participating in the blockchain. But it's basically, they call it a meme crypto. So it has no use. It has no basis. It has no nothing. And that's why I only threw a couple $100 at it at 8 cents. You know what I mean? Because I was like, it's a joke. I'm not going to do it. Bitcoin's like the gold of the cryptocurrency world. And then Ethereum is like, somebody, one of the YouTubers I follow, said it's like the electricity of the cryptocurrency world. And there's at least a dozen cryptos that are based on Ethereum. So,
well, I heard of Ethereum and Bitcoin, of course.
Yeah, they're the big ones.
Dogecoin, I never heard of.
Yeah. So Dogecoin is, you know, everybody's comparing Dogecoin to GameStop. Everybody's concerned that you're going to lose your shirt on Dogecoin. And, you know, and on any of these, you can. This is not financial advice for sure.
Right.
But, you know, the fact that institutions are, on one hand, bad-mouthing these cryptocurrencies and then not letting their retail investors invest in them, and yet on the back end, they themselves are investing in all of the cryptos. You know what I mean? It's kind of backhanded.
They're hedging their bets.
They're hedging their bets, but they're putting some serious money into it. So
wow.
The market cap of Doge is approaching $1 trillion. You know, Bitcoin is
now Dogecoin. Those are mined as well as at the same as like how Bitcoin and Ethereum are.
Bitcoin is definitely mined. I know Dogecoin has a cap on how many are out there, but I'm unclear on how it's mined or how it's used.
I know, it's such a black box.
And then Ethereum is just like the contractual blockchain.
Ah.
And then later we'll talk about Bad Batch, but Bad Batch also said, I need to throw another $100 into crypto because Bad Batch is talking about crypto blockchain for people.
Yeah. Yeah, I will get to that.
All right.
So the Loki promo, what'd you think?
I love it. I was like, finally, you know, somebody's listening to Trailer Junkies podcast over at D+. Thank you guys for listening. We said that we needed shows that weren't just coming out on Friday, that our Friday's kind of stacked. And what a perfect time to do it. Let's do it in the summertime.
Yeah. I mean, you know, especially with kids, it's not a school night in the summertime.
Right.
And I like the YouTube edits, YouTube cuts were like,
where it's just a smash cut. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We don't have to cut away. It's same angle, everything.
Everything is the same. And it's like, you know, how when you watch a YouTuber, they cut out all their pauses and breaks and ums and whatever.
Yeah.
And they just like mash it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, what am I watching this on YouTube?
Jump cuts.
Yeah. No transitions or anything.
Well, no transitions, you know, and we've learned how to make promos for, you know, 50 years or whatever. And you have a B-roll camera. You just put them 30 degrees off axis to the action of the main camera, and you do close-ups of hands, and you do a close-up of the side of his face, and then you have something to cut to cut away and then cut back. But yeah, let's go sloppy. Let's just do YouTube stuff because nobody cares about that anymore. The art is gone in this, my friend.
I don't know if I'd even say the art is gone. I mean, I think
it's a new art. Yeah.
You watch enough YouTube people that you become sensitized. It's almost endearing to watch people just being themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very YouTube-ish. With, you know, just the way he's addressing the camera, talking.
Right.
But I like, too, it's like, sorry to bother you, but you know, I just want to let you know, as if he's interrupting a YouTube video or something.
And he does it as Tom. He does it as himself, not his character.
Exactly. For lack of a way to describe it, he is interrupting your YouTube watching.
Right.
With a YouTube cut promo.
Right. No, it's beautifully done.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty brilliant how they did that. And I like how he comes off like really just almost kind of innocently like, oops, well, sorry, but you know, I just got to get this info out to you, you know, because he's not as brash and angry as the Loki character that he plays.
Right. And he's still a little brash and, you know, and he's just,
well,
not,
sure.
Just not angry, I think is correct. And then you know, and then he owns it, and he's like, you know, Wednesday's the new Friday, because you know, in the summertime, like we said, it is. Because the first thing my kids said was like, oh my God, what if I have school and classwork and all this stuff? I'm like, it's the summertime, guys.
June 11th. When is your last day?
June 9th, right? Not June 11th. It was June 11th, and then it glitches, and then it ends up being June 9th.
Oh, The Misfits is June 11th.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the one that we're going to talk about next. But yeah, you're right about that, June 9th.
So that was fun.
Yeah. And then when you look at it that way, though, that their last day of school is, what, the 10th, probably? I mean, it is for our school district.
Yeah, I think we get out sooner, I think, because we go back in the middle of August.
Yeah, we do too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Like August 12th or something?
Yeah, but we get 3 weeks at Christmas.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, so that's probably where that extra week comes in at the end.
Because we only have 3 more weeks of school.
Yeah, we have 4, I think.
Yeah, okay, so that's it.
I know, it's crazy. The school year is almost over.
Ugh.
But yeah, so The Misfits in theaters 6/11 And then it comes streaming, digital, and on demand.
Okay.
On the 15th. So what is digital and on demand?
I think they're just hedging their bets, right?
But what's the difference between digital and on demand? They say it as if it's two different things.
Well, I think to me, on demand, yeah, I don't know. I think.
Oh, you know what it is? Paramount has their own streaming network, right?
They do. Yep. Yep.
So if you subscribe to Paramount, it's digital. Otherwise, on demand for probably like Amazon or something.
Yeah, you could buy it. You could rent it for $20 or $10
exactly.
Or something.
Okay,
some
I think that's what
point.
That means now.
Thank you. You answered your own question before I could
did.
Spit out. let me just have a sip of beer. You can do the rest of this. It's fine.
I don't know. You love heist movies. I mean, this is.
I was about to say this is a heist
movie.
This
is right in your wheelhouse.
I mean, if I can't get Anne to watch a Pierce Brosnan heist movie, you know, then I don't know what's wrong.
He's looking old though.
He's looking old, but come on, this is like Ocean's 50 or something.
It is. Yeah. No, it's like Ocean's 5. Because there's only five of them.
No, I was thinking they're 50 years old. He's 50 years old, you know.
Well, I know. Hey. I resemble that. No, so last week we were talking about Jackie Chan, and you thought he was 70, and I thought he was like, I don't know, whatever I said, 50 or something,
mm-hmm.
55. So Jackie Chan was, what, 67, I think. That's how old Pierce Brosnan is, too, 67.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, heist movies.
Can't go wrong. Stealing from the bad guys.
The jump cuts. It's
Tim Roth. Tim Roth is a bad guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's popcorn. I mean, I can't wait.
Yeah.
This looks really like a lot of fun. It's like, I don't know, the Ocean's movies, a Ryan Gosling movie. You know, it's high action, high tempo. It's just, I think it's going to, you know, when you see a woman walking in like with a cheetah and a leash, it's just like, okay, sure, you win. You got the cheetah.
And it's got all the exposition. You know, they could turn the movie on and just have it be wall-to-wall action because you took care of all the exposition you need in the trailer.
Exactly.
You don't need any story beyond what they told us in the trailer. So
everybody chases everybody. Gunplay, fast cars, and gold bars. That's all you need.
And I kept thinking, you know, and because everybody compares Bitcoin to gold, every time I see gold bars in a safe somewhere, I'm always like, that's not as easy to handle as, you know, Bitcoin. So
right.
You can't transfer gold. You know, you can't even carry that stack of gold out of there yourself, you know.
I mean, if you had, whatever, let's say, I don't know, let's just go big, $1 million in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right? You have $1 million in Bitcoin. You just hit, like, go, and you can transfer money. You can cash out some of the money.
Exactly.
You can transfer it and stuff. What are you going to do? Go get, like, a one-ton dually and start, like, hauling gold bars around? I mean, come on.
And, you know, even the one
gold
bar
is so
by
cumbersome.
Itself. Yeah, it is amazingly cumbersome.
Yeah, I like the sound score, but do you notice the beginning with the, like, that beginning, like, I don't even know how you would describe that musical tone, that pitch, where it's just like they kind of throw a fastball of just that, you know, that music at you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's got to be used in, like, 100 trailers. That music trope.
It's like it's trying to wake you up, or it's trying to make you figure out which window this commercial is playing on, so you can
right.
find it if you have like tabs open.
Yeah, yeah. So you have like 30 tabs open at work. You're like, oh my god, which one is that? But yeah, I mean, overall though, I would also say it's a parable against for-profit prisons.
That's right. Especially in the Middle East. I mean, come on.
In the Middle East, yeah. I mean, I don't care if they're the best prisons in the world. I mean, in some regard, you're kind of like, well, what does that mean? Like, so what is the greatest prison? Like, I don't know, man. Like, there's just something wrong with for-profit prisons.
Yeah.
You make money on incarceration. So the way you increase profits, you have more people incarcerated.
And then you have, like, a system of ticks against a person in prison to keep them in prison,
to keep,
you know what
right.
I mean? And that's to me, worst. That's why this is like, talk about the tropes, talk about the archetypes. There is nothing nuanced about who the bad guy is in this. It's like for-profit prisons in the Middle East. It's like, all right, check all the boxes on how evil this is. Like,
yeah, just from a totalitarian state. And then, yeah, and then Tim Roth is like a British guy running an Arab prison or something, you know? It's just, you know, and it's like Dubai or something, right? You have this city that wasn't there 10 years ago. And now it's this massive
skyscrapers.
The entire place was built all at once into a finished state in this the most modern way you could possibly build anything, right? There's no grit to it. There's no, it's not chunky at all or crunchy or any of that kind of stuff, you know? And that's kind of the feel I get from the prison. Like, you just built this amazing high-end brand new prison in the Middle East where there was nothing 10 years ago or 5 years ago.
Right.
And who are you shipping there? Like, how many criminals are in this city that just started? And like, the way the Middle East operates, I wouldn't even think there's any criminals.
Right? Yeah. You don't need prisons. You need graveyards. That's the way they take care of.
What's the crime? Showing an ankle?
Well, I mean, you know what I think? I think they built it for all the salmon that they got, the salmon fishing in the Yemen, you know? That's what they did.
Yeah.
The last time the Brit went there, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi went there and he made a salmon fishing spot for one of the royalty there.
Oh, really?
It's another one of Anne's favorite movies, Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. I've never seen it, but it has.
Never heard of it.
It has Ewan McGregor and I forget Emily Blunt, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never heard of it. Salmon fishing in Yemen.
In the Yemen, yeah.
Wow.
So he because this sheik or sultan wanted salmon. He was in love with salmon fishing, so he had them build a freshwater river,
like a retention pond or something, a reservoir.
Yeah, but it was that reverse osmosis desalination or whatever.
Oh yeah,
so okay. He needed freshwater salmon and he used the Red Sea or whatever.
Man, it sounds like a page turner.
She watches it every time it's on. It's one of those movies it comes on or she...
Comfort food.
It is.
It's comfort food.
For her, it's better than The Notebook.
So comfort food, what were you watching this week that made you comfortable?
I am really... Oh, so because Audrey...
Well, we watched The Bad Bunch.
Okay, we watched Bad Bunch. We watched it too. Did you? So that came out on May the 4th, so that was great.
Wait, Bad Batch.
Oh, yeah, The Bad Batch.
Bad Bunch.
That's a different show.
Yeah.
That's Clint Eastwood and a whole bunch of old people.
Isn't that The Wild Bunch?
Yeah. So it came out on May the 4th, the initial episode. So that was a
and
Tuesday.
And then May the 7th. May the 7th?
May the 7th.
Yeah. Do you say it like that? May
no,
the 7th?
No,
it's just May 7th.
May 7th.
7 May.
So we watched a couple episodes. Do you feel so? And this is Filoni, and the first episode was great, I thought.
Oh, I loved it.
The second episode, though, I am a little concerned.
Okay.
I feel like the second episode might fall into that idea of how Filoni, through the whole Clone Wars, he can write a 22-minute episode or 30-minute episode where one thing happens during the episode, and then we just put window dressing around the rest of it. It's like, let's just, it will have to be seen in retrospect whether we have extended this series too long. I think that because of the world that Clone Wars was in, it needed to have the filler episodes and, you know, establishing week to week what's going on. But I feel like now we're in this streaming space where we don't need those filler episodes anymore. And the second episode felt like, other than having the ship impounded, that was the only real action that we got in there. Oh, and then also explaining blockchain, explaining that people's social security numbers are now part of the blockchain. And, you know, and that was kind of interesting to me. But, you know, the family wasn't really too excited about them trying to get serial numbers as a whole plot to a whole episode, you know.
So you enjoyed the first episode. It was like an hour, 10 minutes, something along those lines.
Yeah. And it was action packed and it set up the whole series. And you have, you have the one internal guy who was that had the chip or wanted to do what he was, you know, Order 66. So because of that, it really sets them apart. What's his name? Crosshair?
Crosshair.
Crosshair becomes their foil. You know, he's part of their batch, but then he becomes their foil.
You're concerned that each episode now is going to be one conflict, one resolution, and it's not going to be as complex as maybe the first episode was.
Yes.
Similar to how the Clone Wars animated series was.
I think so. And I think Clone Wars, you know, the Clone Wars needed to fill 22 episodes or whatever per season, per year to fill up the calendar. And, you know, I don't think this, I don't even know how many episodes this is, but I don't think it's 22 episodes. So let's make, you know, A, B, and C plot stories weave seamlessly together the way they've done it so well in the Marvel stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And Mandalorian was also.
You think this is going to be 22 episodes?
No. I don't think this will be. I think this is super short. That's why I'm saying it needs to be a little more expositionally impactful in each episode.
No, and I would agree with that. I mean, I really enjoyed the first episode. Mm-hmm. After the first episode, I mean, for an animated series, I was blown away. I thought it was.
Oh, it's great.
After the original trilogy, it was like my favorite Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode was. But I agree with what you're saying about the second episode, and it slowed down a little bit. But again, they always have that one conflict, that one resolution, very linear, and almost to the extent that because it's animated, they might assume that it's more younger children watching. And I don't know, maybe if it's younger children watching, they might think that kids can't be that involved with complex stories or complex interwoven conflicts and things, which I don't know about that. I mean, I think kids can follow complex stories. They do it with Marvel, you know?
Yeah. And I think, don't dumb it down for the kids for sure. Let's pull the kids up. And if the kids are missing stuff, you know, we can watch 20 explainers on an episode, and show them how it's layered in, you know?
Yeah, nowadays, that's for sure.
So, I think, you know, Filoni is a genius when it comes to this brand of storytelling. And I think we'll have to see if he's growing into this space or if he's going to fall into the comfort of what he did for so many years successfully in Clone Wars, you know?
Yeah, right. And as you're saying, I mean, successfully, and I would agree, you know, very successful, but it's a different medium almost in that, well, maybe not medium, I guess the medium is the same, but a different way of telling a story when you're looking at the 22 episodes.
It's a different consumption pattern.
Yeah, versus, I don't know, 8 to 10. Yeah, 10. And in 10, you have to be complex. You have to, you know, one of the things we're watching is The Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
And we're back with that. And, you know, now they're at a weekly Wednesday, like I was saying last week, how they gave you that initial bingeable content. And then they jumped into the weekly parts now. But you see the different storylines playing out. They're cutting to this character in a different country, and there's like five other stories going on revolving around that character,
right?
Five other lesser stories that make for the one greater story. Then you have the handmaids and their stories, and there's multiple handmaids that might be some, there's like a hierarchy of handmaids,
right?
If you want to think about it in like their hierarchy of stories and so on, but they're all interwoven. They're all complex. Some are more complex than others. Some are more detailed than others as the show needs them to be, but each episode is more than just one conflict and one resolution.
Right, exactly.
I agree with you. I think the Bad Batch needs to, you know, it needs to go down a path that's going to just have these interwoven stories of multiple characters that gets you, like, there's five of these guys.
Right.
And it's like, let's say they get separated. You have to have different guys in different scenes. You have to start feeling for each one of them.
Right.
When you think about the Clone Wars, yeah, you have Obi-Wan. Yoda kind of plays a lesser character. He shows up when he needs to.
Right.
But you have Obi-Wan.
Anakin. Ahsoka.
Yeah, Ahsoka. Those are like the main three.
Right.
Right. And then, of course, everyone else kind of is lesser to them. But each episode focuses on one character for that one episode, and they're like the star of that episode. And then the next episode, there's like a new star of that episode.
Right.
You can't do that when with this, I don't think. There's too many. I mean, when you have five clones, you have to like weave it together in a complex web, you know?
I think so. And I think Omega will provide the complexity over the coming weeks. I looked it up just now, and it is a 16 episode season.
Okay.
Season. So it's going to be out there for a while. That's like 4 months. It's going to bridge all the way through, through the summer.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's a long time. And, you know, it's not the full, I mean, I don't even know. I say 22 episodes, but I don't know. Just the Clone Wars seasons, just, they just plod on and on and on, you know?
Well, we're in season, I think we're finishing season 5. We haven't watched it in a while. We pick up an episode here, an episode there, but
That's like with us with the West Wing. It's like we watch 2 episodes a month now of the West Wing.
Yeah, it's like the first 4 seasons, man, you're just like plowing through it. And then after, like, you got to figure that's you're punching in like around 100 episodes at that point.
Yeah.
You know, in 88 episodes, you know, and you're just like, oh, my God. And now we're probably, I don't even know where we are, 12 episodes into the 5th season or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, we still have another 15 of these things to go.
Mm-hmm.
We have another 20-25 in season 6, and then whatever season 7 has.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just
it's work.
So Clarissa,
it's work.
It becomes homework, yeah. So Clarissa said, she said, "Why don't we just go find all the essentials and we'll just watch those and be done?"
Oh, and I mean, I think a platform like Disney Plus, you know, as you look at the way they've put the movies in order in the Lucas Cinematic Universe, and all the Skywalker movies are there in order, and then Marvel Cinematic Universe put all those movies in order, they need to have a Clone Wars Essentials. And it's, you know, the top 10, 15, even 20 over the course of 100. You know what I mean? Like, you could pick, you could have Filoni himself pick the top 20 episodes that are must watches, where pivotal things are decided and happen, and just cull it down to be like, you know, you've seen it before, or you want to get to the Bad Batch, or you want to have that feeling that you're, you know, you watch the Bad Batch with somebody and they mention Rex. And I felt really great when they mentioned Rex in the Bad Batch. And I was like, oh, but somebody who hasn't watched the Clone Wars, maybe they don't have a feel. And then I thought, who is watching the Bad Batch and hasn't watched the Clone Wars? Who is that person that's like that?
And when you watch the Clone Wars, I mean, it's what, 154 episodes or something,
mm-hmm.
right? If I had to guess, it's 160 episodes total, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like you said, it's work, you know? And you're just, like, plowing through it. And I can't tell you the countless episodes you watch, and you just think to yourself, that didn't move the story forward at all. It did nothing to the story. It was just junk food.
Right.
So I don't know. I just hope the Bad Batch doesn't.
133 episodes in the Clone Wars.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
You know, I just hope the Bad Batch doesn't go down the path of just junk episodes, fill in time. Like you say, it's an old model. You can't write to fill hours anymore. There's just too many good things to watch. Why would it, you know, The Walking Dead, a perfect example.
Yeah.
24 was like that. You
right.
know, you're just filling hours.
You're like, he has to get from Van Nuys to Beverly Hills on this episode of 24.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, it takes like 3 episodes because of LA traffic. I know. Can you imagine, though? 3 hours, he's just sitting in traffic. That'd be amazing.
Well, have you watched? Did you watch? So I watched a bunch of stuff. But what did you watch?
We started a new show on Netflix, Cursed.
Okay.
Cursed is like a King Arthur, Excalibur, you know, Merlin, the magician, all that stuff. But it takes place when King Arthur is like a young lad, maybe just above a squire. There's a woman who's a fae, so she's like in the forest, magical kind of creature. They call her a witch and stuff, but she's not really a witch. But
right,
so it takes place maybe 20 years or something, if I had to guess, 25 years prior to the King Arthur Excalibur story.
Okay.
And the hero in this one is a young woman, maybe, I don't know, like early 20s, late teens. And so far we watched two episodes. It's really good. It's a lot of fun. And then we watched, like I said, The Handmaid's Tale. So we watched the next episode of that. And that was pretty much it for the week.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't get a whole lot of watching done. I mean, we did some, but just those few shows.
So I continued bringing Audrey down when Anne takes Bryce to school. And I said, all right, so it's after school. You've done your homework. You checked in asynchronously. Come on down and watch a movie while I'm working and building my Airtable stuff, you know? And I've been able to revisit the stuff that's not necessarily out in streaming, but I have DVDs in my old DVD collection. I have like 400 plus DVDs.
Oh man, this guy.
And I was like, all right, watch some movies with me and we'll see if they hold up, you know? And we started to watch 12 Monkeys and we got halfway through 12 Monkeys. And I was like, it doesn't really hold up that much. It doesn't hold up as
Bruce Willis. Yeah.
And Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Madeline Stowe.
That was like 96 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, 96. You're right. Exactly. Because that was part of the plot line was the fact that he went back to 1990 and he meant to go to 1996. So it didn't hold up as much as I hoped it would. Audrey was checked out, so we turned it off.
What part of it didn't hold up? Was it like the special effects or?
Yeah, you know, part of it she was saying like, I don't know if it's quaint that it has this, you know, unbelievable special effects or, you know, or if it looks like a student film for part of it. And I was like, oh, Terry Gilliam's a genius. What are you talking about? And the acting in it is phenomenal, save Madeline Stowe. I'm not a Madeline Stowe fan. But yeah, I thought Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis both gave great performances. And we just, you know, it just didn't connect with her. And it was at a different pace and a different time. So we turned that off. So the next day I said, oh, we won't finish that. We'll save it for later if you ever want to finish it. But I'll tell you what happened. So I told her what happened. And I was like, it's done. Now you know what happened. We can move on. But then I said, here's the one that I think you'll like, Swingers.
Oh, man, that's one of my favorites.
So
Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby. I said, you're a big bear with claws and teeth. And I said, and I told her after that scene, I was like, you know, in high school, my friends and I would just walk around hyping each other up, talking about how we're all big bears with teeth and claws and they're just little bunny rabbits, you know, And so she connected with the movie amazingly. And then it's so funny to be.
It's not you. It's me. It's what I'm going through.
And then just the agony of him calling the girl right away, right after he met her.
Oh, like, that's what I mean. It was like, and like, you're there with him. You're like, don't do it. Oh, he did it again.
And so it just went back and forth. And then I was like, that's happy, you know, happy Hogan, right? It's like, it doesn't look like him. It doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds a little like him, but I was like, he's not, now he's known as a director, producer of, you know, mega blockbuster movies, you know?
And he's like 100 pounds heavier.
Yeah, that's also the case. But it was just fun to watch, and it was great to see that it held up so well over the years. So it was amazing.
One of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
It was not the Hollywood writing part of it, you know, the starving writer, whatever, but
relationships.
Well, I could connect with it because moving to California and everything, and I had a girlfriend in Chicago, and then that relationship kind of ended weird and awkward and poorly. And, you know, I was in California, like trying to like figure out what I was doing because like I sold everything in Illinois and, you know, and so I could relate to that character in, you know, new beginnings, new relationships. I didn't, when I first saw it, I hadn't yet met Clarissa, but so much of like, his heart ache.
Yeah.
For the old girlfriend and the wanting to be with her, but the wanting to do his new beginning and to be where he was, and the girl was back where she was, and
there's some genius scenes in there. You know, when his friend is talking about how the women know when you've really forgotten and when you're just faking that you forgot. Like, they just know. They just know that you haven't forgotten them, so they're not going to call, you know? And once you forget them, that's the minute they will call. And it's just so perfectly talked about.
As he hangs up and she says, I love you. And on the one hand, you're like...
You're cheering for him.
Well, that's what he's been wanting the entire movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, he met this new girl.
Right. It's perfect.
And he's excited about his new, you know, his new love.
The opportunity of that love. It's not even fully formed yet. It's that newness.
Right. The potential of where things could
go. Right, right.
Oh yeah, it's such a well-written movie.
Yeah.
And when they're playing the NHL
ice hockey.
It's like hockey.
But imagine a 15-year-old girl in 2021 watching that scene where they're like punching each other, playing replays on the NES,
and the blood comes out.
And I'm just like, and she's like, boys are so stupid.
Right. I mean, God, that movie, I'm going to watch it again.
Watch it. It's amazing.
Oh, it's like, I would say top 10 of all time on my list.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I love that movie because it's so genuine. And I love when they're like, all right, let's go to the party. And everybody drives.
They all drive separately. Yeah.
It's like, that's so LA. LA. Man. Everyone's just driving. And then, you know, they put on the club. But that was the one with Marty and Eileen.
Marty and Eileen. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, at the Dresden.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so me and Chuck, my cousin, we would go to the Dresden, and we would see him there playing and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we've talked to him before about being in that movie and everything. And what we did one night, or one weekend maybe it was, we did like our own swingers pub crawl.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And we went to all the bars that they went to.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I don't remember what they were and stuff, but they, you know, like, they're all these kind of like LA, I don't know, dive bar kind of clubs,
yeah,
or whatever it is. And
I call, I mean, they're nostalgia bars now, but yeah, I mean,
yeah. You know, but this was like early 2000s,
uh-huh,
you know, 2001, 2002, maybe somewhere in that 2000, you know, somewhere in that range. And it was a lot of fun going to those places. And it's like, you know, you go in the back door and it's like the light is like red velvet, you know.
It's dark. Yeah, it's right.
Oh yeah, it's like $10 drink night. You know, and that's like on the cheap drinks and the well drinks, you know. And but it was super expensive. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know. And then you'd go places, and we'd pull up in my old Mazda,
uh-huh,
and you know, we get a valeted. It's like, looking back on it, it's like a Mazda protege. Like, what the heck, you know? But that movie is, I gotta watch it again. That movie is so awesome.
So while we're watching it, I told Audrey, I said, you know, Friday night we're going over to Alistair and Gil's. And I said, Alistair and Gil met swing dancing. They were swing dancers, and that's, you know, what they did for fun.
That's very cool.
And that's how they met, and that's the people were going to their house on Friday night for our first party out post-COVID. Not post-COVID, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
First fully vaccinated party, you know. I guess that's the way you classify it now. So at our little party, we, you know, we're hanging out talking, and I said, I showed Audrey Swingers, you know what I mean? I showed her the movie and she loved it. And everyone's like, did it hold up? Did it hold up? And I was like, yeah, it held up. And I
totally holds up.
And I said, Alistair, I said, I told her how you and Gil met at, you know, at swing dancing. And he goes, yeah, I'm in B-roll in the movie Swing Dancing. And I was
like, in that movie?
And I was like, that's awesome. And he goes, yeah, except I got off late at work one night, and I, you know, and I would go to dance and swing dance for fun, you know, to let off steam. And I went to the bar, you know, and there's all these, and all these lights are up and everything's up. And I'm like, no, like you ruined my play, my spot, my release of energy that I needed to do.
Because they were filming.
Because they were filming the movie and they were filming B-roll of just dancing and stuff like that. So he's on, like, I don't know whether he made it into the stuff, but he was there dancing while they were shooting B-roll of the Voodoo Daddy stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, that's awesome. See, Audrey, I told you there's a connection here. I think I've heard this story before, but I don't remember it fully.
So cool. So cool.
So I'm glad you're going to watch it again.
I mean, I've seen it a number of times, but I haven't seen it for quite some time. But it's
10 years, probably?
Probably about 10 years, I'd say.
I think that's how long it was for me as well. But see, look, you remember that movie the way I remember Boogie Nights. Come on. You remember like, all these scenes and everything.
Oh, I remember, like, I mean, and I love too when he's like, he's, you know, he has the In and Out shirt.
I know. I turned to Audrey. I said, that's the beginning of the end right there. It became his drug. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, right. That's hilarious. You know, and it's something though, because I think from, and I don't remember, I loosely remember the story of it though, but Swingers is based on, I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden. What's his name?
Oh, Jon Favreau?
Yeah, Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn, their trials and tribulations trying to get work.
Yeah, it's loosely based on Jon Favreau's, because he wrote it and everything.
Right.
And it's loosely based on his coming to L.A. to break into the business and stuff. And now the dude's doing, like, the Marvel movies, and he's in all these movies. And, you know, we were just done. We just finished watching the Avengers. No.
Iron Man
what
3.
What was the one? Black Widow? Iron Man. Yeah, whatever it was. I think it was Iron Man 3, right. Iron Man 2. Who knows? It's like, mush at some point.
He did all the Iron Mans, yeah.
But where Black Widow's, like, kicking everybody's ass, and they,
yeah,
and then Favreau's in this like fist fight that
in the boxing ring, right, with her.
Well, he's just in this fist fight that's taking as long as it takes her to beat up like 30 dudes, and he takes out the one guy, and he's like, "I got him." You know,
did you ever see Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau's sequel to Swingers, Made?
I saw Made. Yeah.
Yeah. Made is definitely substandard to Swingers. It does
it's
not
okay.
meet it. But I told Audrey, I said, they get to flip roles basically, because Vince Vaughn in Made, he plays the nice guy, the straight guy, and Jon Favreau in that one plays the douchebag. You
know, like. Right. What was the one where Vince Vaughn was in? He was like the bar owner. Was that Made?
No, boxers in that one. I don't know the one where he's a bar owner.
No, he plays. Oh, you know what? That might have been. No, that was. What's the one on
Dodgeball? No.
No, it was a series. Oh, I'll have to look it up.
All right.
The first season was with Matthew McConaughey, and where they were the cops in New Orleans.
Oh yeah, yeah. True Detective.
True Detective. Yeah, I think Vince Vaughn was like a bar owner in like the second season of True Detective or something.
Okay. All right. I'll visit that. Oh yeah, yeah. I think I remember that.
Yeah, I want to say that's what he was in when he was, and I was confusing that with Made, but yeah, that wasn't Made. But yeah, and True Detective was good too, but that was a one-off. Each season was its own story. It didn't carry over.
Right. The anthology series. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. But that's a whole other conversation.
And then the last thing that I want to mention that I saw this week that, you know, because I'm trying to get Audrey to watch all these classic movies from back in the 90s.
Now, what's the reason for that? Just to expand her viewing, or?
She, you know, yeah, she wants to be a film, you know, film buff or whatever, a film major. You know, that's her thought right now. She wants to be behind the camera. She Greta Gerwig is her hero. You know, she wants to have her own Little Women. She likes it when cinematographers change the lighting so you know that it's a flashback kind of thing, and they do these subtle cinematic elements, and she really wants to get into the film business. I mean, you live in Los Angeles. I think you kind of have that in your blood, and, you know, and I've done some stuff, you know, produced a movie, and
yeah, that's like film noir, and then they have like the prison bar lighting, you know, and
yeah exactly,
that's
exactly.
Like a premonition to where this person's going and stuff,
right? So yeah. She enjoys all of that, enjoys the archetypes, and so I said, well, you can't just have modern movies, you need a little film school, you know, you need a little you know, old movies, you need to mix some of the 90s in, some of the older stuff in. You can't just watch Social Network.
Who's the Swedish director? What's his name?
Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah, Ingmar Bergman. You got to get some of that going.
Well, I'm going to ease my way into that, you know.
That's film school stuff.
I'll leave that to the film teachers that are, you know, that she wants a grade from. But I just want to spark the love of the films that I loved and to see if they hold up. But so because I'm doing that and because I'm trying to expose her to that, she's like, well, let me share something that I'm watching with you. And then so I said, that's fine. So she goes, I don't think you'll like it, but I love it. And she showed me Wayne. And Wayne is this amazing show. It's about a kid in Boston who grows up, you know, poor in Boston. I think Boston. It feels like Boston. And he's just a vigilante from birth. Like he's just like this brutal vigilante that just believes in justice to a fault. And he takes out all the bullies and all the people that do anything to anybody for the wrong reasons, you know? And he does it in this brutal, brutal, you know, way. And as I watch it, I think it feels like Rescue Me. Did you ever watch Rescue Me?
I don't know if I have or not. It sounds...
So Rescue Me is Dennis Leary and a bunch of other people from...
Yes.
From Boston and New York City.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's all about... I've seen like, it. Yeah, it's all about the fire department versus the police department kind of stuff. And it's the fire department mainly. Post 9/11. So it was like very poignant. But yeah, this has that same grit to it. And I was like, Audrey, do you not know me? This is perfect. I love this stuff. I'm going to watch this without you at all. And she's already seen the whole season, so she doesn't need to watch it again with me. But she can if she wants. But it was a great, refreshing thing to see something that has that grit in it that was produced now. So it's so funny to see something that, you know, to juxtapose me showing her something from 30 years ago that holds up, and then her to show me something that's modern day but has the grit of something like 20 years ago was phenomenal. A phenomenal juxtaposition of like co-watching with your kids that I would never even fathom. Like, I'd always thought of like, when will my kids be old enough to see Goodfellas? You know what I mean? And like, that was always Goodfellas and Usual Suspects. Like, when can I show this to my kids? And Audrey's right in that wheelhouse now where, you know, she watches horror movies that I don't want to watch, you know? So she's in the space where she understands it and she gets it and she likes the ideas behind the things. So I appreciate her. And now she has her own taste in television and cinema, and that I can now benefit from separately, which I didn't even think was going to be a thing. But it's amazing that it is.
And I would even say things like Casablanca,
yeah,
you know, and looking at just the way they started working multi-camera and, you know, panning and the things that they did in those movies, looking at movies like Double Indemnity.
Well, we watched The Thin Man. Anne had us watch Thin Man and Abbott and Costello.
Oh, yeah.
The Rebel something. And they were great, and they hold up too. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like that film noir stuff, you know, and I think looking at that, like she was talking about lighting and how the lighting changes when they go back, but they couldn't really do color changes in black and white.
Right.
But they would do other things.
Right.
You know, to project it to the future or however they might have done it, depending on the movie. But yeah, like movies with like William Holden, you know, and Barbara Stanwyck and stuff. I mean, like, I used to watch a lot of those with my grandmother.
That's right. That's
stuff,
right.
You know, and yeah, like I you know, and so did Clarissa too. And then of course there's like the more 1960s versions of like the Danny Kaye movies and stuff.
Right.
But those are a little more like upbeat and peppy dance numbers and stuff, not so much like film school kind of things.
Yeah, the 60s and the 70s for me is definitely about the French cinema, you know, like because I went to film school, it's like Breathless, 400 Blows, you know, that those are the kind of movies from the 60s and 70s that I like.
Yeah, or like The Bicycle Thief.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's another classic one and stuff. But yeah, that's funny.
Man, The Bicycle Thief. Talk about The Bicycle Thief. Anyway.
All right, man. Yeah, I love that, though. I love that she's getting into these and, you know, and watching one of my all-time favorites.
Amazing.
You know,
that's,
yeah, I love that. I love that. So, all right, well, we better get going.
Cool.
And I got it. I have some Swingers to catch
there
up
you
on,
go.
You know?
Watch Swingers again. It holds up.
Go.
Yay.
All right, Ted, we'll talk to you, man.
Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.